This time on Weather Brains, how accurate are those TV weather folks?
We can be dead wrong. You know, anybody who claims to be, you know, some forecast giant that never is wrong, then that's just don't listen to them for sure.
What some would like to see happen to the National Weather Service.
There definitely is a move by some private weather forecasting firms out there to make the National Weather Service return to its 1870 core duty, which was just to, you know, take observations and issue basic warnings.
And is Alabama's severe weather luck running out?
I just find it incredible to believe that Alabama can go through another spring severe weather season without one or two horrendous outbreaks of severe weather.
That and more coming up. Welcome to Weather Brains. I'm David Black for the Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama, saying hello and thank you for listening. We have with us this time Bill Murray and James Spann. Hello, both of you guys. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, David. How are you, James? Hello.
I'm doing great. I wonder where JB and Brian Peters and Jason and Olshu are. They've got to be at some honky-tonk or something, you know?
I think they're probably running from the law.
I think JB's still asleep after this weekend and all the staying up late.
I think it's one of the three. They're asleep, they're running from the law, or they're at a honky-tonk. Or maybe all three.
Yeah, more than likely. Speaking of the previous weekend, this was another winter storm threat and sort of materialized in some ways for folks in the southeastern part of the U.S. Guys, this was another one of those cases where you were really having to ride some fine lines in forecasting. Would you not say that?
I was just thankful I was out of town this weekend, so Murray had the whole thing by himself, Murray and JB. But it was a close call, wasn't it, Bill?
It was very close the entire weekend. You know, both nights we had active weather, you know, both times. And, you know, it was a very thin line the entire process. And it's funny because you watch yourself going from, you know, trying to be cautious with your forecast to then, you know, wanting to make sure that, you know, you've covered all your bases. And as that happened, you know, we kind of, you know, we're cautious, and then we overwarned a little bit, and then, you know, we came back to what really happened early, especially Monday morning.
What was the toughest part of that, you guys think? So,
I think part of our problem, David, is that our coverage area is so large. You can have a huge variety of weather in a situation like that from point A to point B. This television market, the Birmingham DMA, includes 22 counties, and over the weekend, you had some counties with bridge icing and difficult travel, and everything was kind of shutting down. In many counties, just a cold rain falling, and trying to distinguish the line between the ice and the rain is awfully hard to do. Looking back on it, I think we had a pretty good grasp on it. My problem, my last forecast I wrote late last week, I wasn't cold enough. That was a dandy of an air mass coming down from Canada. Montesano Mountain up in Huntsville dropped to 11 degrees. Birmingham dropped to 22. We had many spots north of Birmingham in the teens. I wasn't cold enough. That was the, you know, we had, what was that station in Nebraska, Bill, that hit 35 below zero?
I think it was Chadron.
Yeah.
Chadron, Nebraska hit 35, minus 35 Saturday morning, I believe, and that just, you know, really indicated the strength of the air mass.
You guys complained, too, about getting burned by one of the models in particular as far as its ability to forecast temperatures in winter. At least I've heard a lot of gripes the past couple of weeks, it seems.
Well, I get on my soapbox here. I believe during cold weather season, and that'd be October through March for us, in the longer range, David, the GFS, the Global Forecast System, and I say longer range, beyond 48 hours, those numbers just skew toward climatology, which means most of the time it will spit out highs in the 50s and lows in the 30s, and it just doesn't work. I mean, if you look at December and January, and if you forecast highs in the 50s and lows in the 30s here where we are in Alabama, you'd be correct only maybe 15% of the time. Weather is rarely average here, so you just reject those things completely. Even up until 3 days before this past weekend, the GFS Moss thought the high on Saturday was going to be in the mid-50s, and that was just laughable. The high in Birmingham on Saturday was something like 36 during the day, so there's a 20-degree error, and I caution people to watch out for who I call the Moss lemmings, you know, everybody that just takes those Moss numbers and uses them. And so many of these forecast products use those things, and I don't think any human touches them. And I'm not going to start naming names here, but Just be careful with what forecast products you use in the cold weather season, because all forecasts are not the same.
And that brings up something I wanted to ask you guys about, and I know you don't want to throw rocks anywhere, and that's certainly not our intention anyway, but is it not frustrating to you, both of you guys, when you give it your best shot to put an extended forecast that you think is your most accurate possible projection, and you see another forecast from some quasi-official source? And I mean, it's light years different. Isn't that just a little disconcerting?
Well, it certainly creates confusion, David, and we get we would get a lot of email after an event. Like, you know, we received an email this week that James shared with us, where another media outlet was pointing to a temperature that was, I think probably nearly 20 degrees different from the one that we had, and unfortunately we were a lot closer to accurate than they were, and perhaps they were biting on the Moss products. But it really shows, that you have to begin to learn where you're getting your weather information from, and when you're the consumer out there, you gotta listen to somebody you trust.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about it, David, everybody's got a choice, and you can go to a variety of websites and radio and television stations, and you've just got to pick a source and stick with it. You go to weather.com and weather.gov and, then local television station websites, and they're all going to be different. The one thing and I can't speak for everybody else. I would love to have somebody on here with us from the National Weather Service one show. I know people are listening within NOAA, and maybe somebody will come on here with us. They can describe what they do. The one thing I like about the web, which we did not have years ago, back when, David, you and I worked at 13, web was something that spiders were spinning back then. We are able to explain in great detail why we're forecasting, what we're doing, what we're thinking, what can go right, what can go wrong. And that, what I believe, that's the function of our blog. And we post that thing all the time. I write two detailed discussions every day. And on top of that, I put together a video, a web video that goes through computer model graphics and other graphics. We look at teleconnections and just discuss the whole thing. And so the one thing about at least what we do, and understand, we can be dead wrong. Anybody who claims to be, some forecast giant that never is wrong, then that's, just don't listen to them for sure. But at least we put out there what we're thinking, and I think that helps people to understand where we're coming from and maybe give some credibility to what we're doing. We try and back up everything we say in those forecasts with the explanation and the thinking behind it.
Something that you just said, James, reminds me of a comment I believe Jason Simpson said on one of our previous Weather Brains podcasts, talking about the presence of the internet. Yeah, we have all the information available to us, you guys do, in forecasting, but I guess that also means that you really feel more than ever you're on the hot seat now to decide and project things quickly, because everything's an instant information age now. Do you feel that kind of a pressure that really maybe did not exist as much before the internet?
Well, I'll let Bill share his thoughts. Yes, there's a lot of added pressure. Every 15-year-old kid with a computer and an internet connection can see the same data we can see, which means everybody's a meteorologist. You've got, high school kids and housewives, and everybody's looking at the GFS and the NAM and the European and the UK Met. Everybody can draw conclusions. And so in a way, that puts pressure on us to go beyond just looking at computer model data and use our knowledge of the atmosphere and use experience. One experience is a great teacher, and you do this for a long time. That also is a big help. And that's why I think everybody here, the first thing we do whenever there's an event coming, we'll get J.B. Elliott first off and say, J.B., what do you think? Because this guy's been doing it for 50 years. Wouldn't you agree, Bill?
Exactly, because I was going to say that, James. That's one of the things we do when we're, when we're sitting here trying to make a decision in the forecast office. The question goes to JB, what do you think? And generally he breaks the tie sometimes. That's, that voice of experience is important.
And speaking of voice of experience, I think he still has people recognize him for his voice from the years that he spent in the National Weather Service. That's amazing.
This would be a good night to talk about JB, because he's not on here with us.
He can't defend himself.
I think for all of us here, he's our mentor. Everybody needs a mentor in whatever profession that you do. And certainly I cherish the nights that I would drive down to the National Weather Service when he worked there. And I was very young and very green and didn't know that much. I would go down and just soak up knowledge from him. Every night between the 6 and the 10 o'clock news, the nights I didn't go home to see my wife, I'd go down to the Weather Service and see JB and those guys. And even to this day, you can learn a lot from somebody like that. Everybody needs a good mentor, and I'm just thankful that he is part of this group, and he's got everything that you need. He's got a thick skin. You know, one of the things you mentioned, the internet, David, we all get hate mail. It doesn't matter if we're right or wrong, you're going to get hate mail. That's just a function of the society we live in now. And JB's pretty good about letting that stuff roll off, and he keeps a common sense about him. And I'm like a bull in a china shop. I'm pretty far out there sometimes in forecasting, but he knows the limitations of the science, and I just think he's a great guy to have with us. Wouldn't you agree, Mr. Murray?
Hello, Bill. You there? His internet connection, I think, is going up and down and all around.
You know, Bill's working off that Commodore 64 in a dial-up modem, I think, was one of those 9.8K things. We're going to try and get him an upgrade here.
Hey, Bill, you there now?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you. This is the fun of the internet. It's a great medium, but we occasionally have little technical pickups along the way, so we'll let you off this time.
Well, good. Yeah, I was going to share a JB story, too, because you know, back in my younger days when I was in high school, you know, I discovered 11 West Oxmoor Road, which was the National Weather Service office then. And, you know, kids on Saturday, on the, you know, the weekends, you know, might be watching cartoons or playing ball or whatever, but I was heading to the National Weather Service when I was, you know, 13, 14 years old. One of the biggest things that ever happened in Birmingham, you know, for somebody who was a weather junkie in those days, was when NOAA Weather Radio came to town. It actually went on the air in November of 1976. And, you know, hands down, J.B. Elliott was the person that you wanted on duty whenever there was any kind of weather going on in Alabama. You had that calm, reassuring voice. You know, you could tell when there was a little bit of excitement in it that you had to take it seriously. But when he went live, and, you know, just a few times did he ever do that, you knew we had a serious weather situation. And he was actually working the day of the Smithfield tornado on April 4th, 1977, which was a deadly day in Birmingham weather history. And it was amazing to, because I'm the kind of kid that carried a weather radio to school, of all things. And I remember his broadcast that day as clear as if it were yesterday. I wish I had a tape of all that.
I don't know who's that heavy breathing here. Somebody's reading some kind of dirty magazine or something here.
Hello to Mr. Brian Peters.
Good evening, Mr. Black and Mr. Spann and Mr. Murray. How's everything in the world of weather brains?
Well, we're telling some stories about J.B. Elliott. Do you want to share anything about what a source of experience and information he is?
Well, you know, I really hate it. I came here just after J.B. retired. As a matter of fact, one of my first official out-of-the-office duties as the deputy meteorologist in charge at the Birmingham office was to attend J.B.'s retirement dinner. And so I never had an opportunity to work with him, but I certainly, in my career in Birmingham, have heard a lot about him and have a great deal of respect for him, and know that he was definitely the voice of the National Weather Service before that name got known, or weather radio got known by that name.
Something that got us toward the JB part of this story, Brian, is the difficulty of forecasting and the fact that with all the models going on, people like JB who have that element of experience, who've been, I guess you could say, burned a time or two, and who learned from it, that the value of having somebody around like that when you're trying to forecast difficult situations is pretty awesome.
Oh, it certainly is. You know, it's one of the things that I fear we're losing from the National Weather Service now is the human element and the human experience. When we lose that, forecasting is going to go downhill a little bit because the models can't do it alone.
I guess I'm an old-fashioned guy, but I miss real voices on weather radio. Am I a old-fashioned person for that? I don't know.
Well, I'd love to get somebody from the National Weather Service on here with us maybe next week. We need to make a point of that because I, like Brian, am beginning to see perhaps not as much human interaction with these forecast products at various weather service offices. And again, I am not blaming anybody. Those guys do a wonderful job, but, you know, they've got restrictions in what they can do coming from the regional headquarters and the national headquarters. Brian, you know, worked out there forever and understands all that. But I would love to hear a little bit from the Weather Service. And I will say this, David, last week in that extended part of the forecast package, you had the National Weather Service forecasting a high of 54 in Birmingham and for Saturday, and we had a forecast high of 39 the same day. There was a huge discrepancy, and that's where a lot of people are sending all these emails. And, you know, and people have a reason to be concerned about that. You've got growers, you've got nurseries, you've got construction people, and it's confusing for them. But I would love to hear more about the National Weather Service and their forecast process. We're all humans, you know. Everything we generate, it's man-made. But then again, we're just forecasting for this one market where the Weather Service has the whole country. So maybe we can get one of those folks in the Weather Service on here with us in coming weeks to discuss how they do their thing now.
Is the fact that an extended forecast by the Weather Service in this case, James, and I'm not trying to, nobody's trying to pick on them, but is the fact that a forecast like that would be so different an indication of just a fundamental difference in meteorological thinking, or are there potentially other issues? I don't know the answer to that.
I think it's logistics. I think most folks could look at that air mass coming down the pike, you know, last week, days in advance, and no, it's gonna be brutally cold. The cold air was so shallow that the moss won't have any clue. I mean, everybody knows that, and I just think that there's so much they have to do. Maybe they just kind of let the you know, moss products kind of take the ball and adjust it as they get closer. But I don't have a good answer. Maybe Brian does. He worked there for a long time.
How much flexibility did you guys have when you were in the Weather Service, Brian?
Flexibility as, like, against moss?
We didn't forecasting in general, I suppose.
Well, the flexibility to forecast the numbers, you know, wind direction, sky cover, temperatures, you got complete flexibility there. The way you say it, you didn't have quite so much flexibility. And now, with the way the forecast is prepared, using matrices and grids, and then those numbers are submitted to a formatter, and the formatter puts out the zone forecast, which is kind of the plain language forecast that we're mostly familiar with.
Sometimes plain language.
Yeah, sometimes those formatters, James, go completely nuts with partly cloudy this morning becoming mostly cloudy at noon, becoming partly cloudy by 3 o'clock. I mean, sometimes
I like the one that it'll say, you know, partly cloudy this morning, becoming partly sunny this afternoon. What does that mean?
Right. Partly cloudy and partly sunny are actually the same thing. It's just your positive outlook on life is the weather. It's one or the other. Is the glass half full or half empty?
And if we get a guy from the Weather Service, I'd love to ask him, what does all these winter weather messages mean? I got a lot of email, David, in this last event from people within literally a stone's throw of their house. You'd have an ice storm warning, a winter weather advisory, and I can't think of all these terms, and I don't know what they mean. I've been doing this for a long time, and
I can help you out there.
Yeah, Brian understands all that, but does Joe and, you know, the average person using these products understand what that stuff means?
And I guess I'd have a question, too. When people look at your television station and see your graphical map of the state with the county outlines in about five or six different colors, do they all know what those mean?
I bet you Bill Murray does.
Well, I tell you, it's funny. When you read those messages, I mean, you have to really read between the lines to see what they're trying to tell you. You know, it's kind of strange because you look at the television warning maps here in Birmingham on our stations, and of course, Cullman belongs to the Huntsville National Weather Service office, but geographically, it actually extends down, you know, between Blount and Walker counties and the Birmingham county warning area. So, you know, consequently, it sticks out like a sore thumb sometimes. If Huntsville has a certain advisory going, Birmingham might have a different one for their zones, and I'm sure that is confusing sometimes to the end user.
And that has to incite some anger probably as well, because I suppose it maybe looks to an end user as if the weather folks don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I got a problem with that because, in like Bill says, Cullman County is in the Birmingham DMA, our television market, but yet they're assigned to the Huntsville Weather Service and their CWA. And to me, that doesn't make any sense, and that's a long subject. Probably nobody from NOAA is going to want to get on here with us because we have, what, five hard issues to deal with here. But that is another one, is how those boundaries are drawn, and there's a long story behind that, and Brian Peters knows all about that. Don't you, Brian?
I do.
There wouldn't be politics in this now, would there, guys?
Well, basically, the bottom line is, when the Huntsville office was being created, the emergency management director for Cullman County demanded that Cullman County be under the new Huntsville office. because his feeling at the time was that the Huntsville office would be so much better than the Birmingham office. So you might call it politics, you might call it the whim of a single individual, you might call it the desire to, you know, be under the cutting edge office. You could name it any number of things.
But he got his wish.
At that time, the government, i.e. the National Weather Service, basically went ahead with the wishes of those who asked for it. So, and it does stick out. And you know, I know James will hate me for this, but I do have to stand up for the Weather Service just a little bit. I mean, after 36 years there, I mean, I got to stand up for them a little bit. And I don't think the intent of all the winter weather stuff is to confuse people. I think it does. I think James is right, and we get hate mail, or he gets it. I don't get hate mail. But the whole intent was to really try to be specific, and that's one of the things that I remember the Weather Service being told by people was that, you know, we want specific information. So real quick, an advisory means, it doesn't matter what kind of advisory, just an advisory. The term advisory means that conditions are going to be an inconvenience. An advisory and a warning are kind of similar. An advisory means inconvenient, but a warning means it's going to be more than just inconvenient. This could be a threat to life and property. And then, of course, a watch, supposedly, hopefully, most of the time, would begin the entire process so that people would have some idea that conditions are favorable for this type of winter weather event. And then we get into the problem of, do you call it a specific kind of event as an ice storm warning or an ice storm advisory, or do you call it winter weather? And winter weather is used when the meteorologists at the Weather Service believe that there will be a combination, or there could be a combination of elements. So if you think you're going to have sleet and snow, or you're going to have some freezing rain and some sleet, or freezing rain and snow, you may say winter weather because you can't really say one or the other, and you don't want to say there's going to be a snow and sleet advisory. You don't really want to do that. So it does. The ultimate thing is, I don't think the intent is to be confusing, but I think the ultimate result is there is a good deal of confusion, especially along boundaries that people out there don't really understand. And we're all dealing with those kind of boundaries. We've got political boundaries that most people are aware of, county and state, but we don't have, I mean, who knows the DMA of ABC 3340 other than us? Does the public know that? I mean, I'm not sure that they do, just like I'm not sure that they know the boundaries of the National Weather Service offices.
And speaking of the Weather Service,
you catch flack about that sometimes, James, from people that think they're in the Birmingham DMA, and of course the way you cover severe weather, they want to know why you're not covering them.
That's a whole nother. We've had about 27 topics on this show so far. yeah, you know, we've got crossover counties that where they can watch us, but they're assigned to another market because a majority of the people in the county watch local TV from that market. And, yeah, they don't understand that. So I certainly understand the issue with boundaries, with TV stations and Weather Service offices and all that. That's confusing for sure.
James, how does a county like Lamar, say, that is not in our DMA, but, you know, when you go over there like to Fayette or Tuscaloosa and the people from Lamar County come in, they talk about, well, you know, everybody I know in Lamar County watches 3340. Who decides that Lamar is in one market or another?
The company is called Nielsen Media Research, and they do the television ratings. They basically determine if we have a job or not. And what they do, it's based on the majority of the people in the county. If a majority of the people in Lamar County watch local television out of Columbus, Mississippi, they'll be assigned to that market, which is the way it is now. If a majority watches local television out of Birmingham, they'll be reassigned to our market. Now, we got Coosa County back. That was a county that was assigned from Montgomery back to Birmingham. And I think we're close on Lamar, but part of the problem now, people that get satellite dishes automatically get out-of-market stations. They don't really have a choice. So it's all a matter of those on cable and that can get us off the air that can watch. So that's
How often are those DMAs rearranged, or how often does somebody look at them?
Once a year.
Once a year?
Yep.
I didn't realize that.
Let me tell you the counties that are close to coming into Birmingham. Cleveland, I know a lot of people are listening that are not from Alabama, but quickly for those that are, Cleburne, Randolph, Marengo, Lamar are all real close. So if you want to be in the Birmingham TV market, you tell all your friends to watch local TV out of Birmingham, and you'll get there.
Hey, James, can I tell you a story about Cleburne real quick?
Yes.
One of my last spotter talks before I retired from the Weather Service was in Cleburne, and one of the questions at the break was exactly this question. You know, Atlanta doesn't cover Cleburne County when it comes to severe weather. And they were really specific to me, and it was like, you're from the government? Can't you change this? And it was like, no, not only can I not change it, I don't even know how it works. And the guy said, well, I know how it works. I have my dish now, but I got it through my mother-in-law's address over in Calhoun County so that I can watch Birmingham stations.
That's about the way it
ingenuity.
Works. And we're not trying to knock the Atlanta TV stations. You know, Cleburne and Randolph are assigned to Atlanta. But I will say this. If there's a tornado on the ground in Woodland, Alabama, which is in rural Randolph County, they're not going to cut off Desperate Housewives or American Idol to go wall-to-wall. I just know they don't do that over there, where we would. So I know they would love to be back, but hopefully if we get a majority of people watching local TV here, that we'll make that happen.
Guys, we got some email from a listener that I thought I'd mention. This sort of ties into what we were talking about a minute or two ago, and Bill Murray may have a thought to share about this, too, because of Bill's knowledge of the private weather industry. A listener by the name of Chuck in Birmingham wrote, "You asked, why did the Weather Channel start using their forecast instead of the National Weather Service? They hope to close down the National Weather Service. They will claim it will save the taxpayers a lot of money if the Weather Channel takes over. I hope this never happens, but they will try in a few years. This would give the crooked politicians more money to waste if taxpayers did not have to support the NWS. You asked who gets their forecast from the NWS. I do every day. Yes, I also get my forecast from you also, but then, as you know, I am a weather nut." End quote. Bill Murray, any thoughts about the private industry wanting to see the National Weather Service go away? And that's probably a whole other subject, too, for another show.
It is. That's probably a couple of shows right there, David. But there definitely is a move by some private weather forecasting firms out there, too. Make the National Weather Service return to its 1870 core duty, which was just to, you know, take observations and issue basic warnings. And of course, over the years, the Weather Service has sort of diversified and, you know, gives a lot of value-added products. Well, they feel like that is in conflict with the original mission of the National Weather Service, which is to collect the data, the satellites, the radar, and make all that available to the private firms. Well, we're a private weather firm. You know, the work that we do for ABC 3340 on the web is done through the Weather Company, and that's what we're here tonight. We're all, parts of the Weather Company. And I think that, I don't know if I speak for the group, but, we're very much against, some of the things that are out there that would limit the National Weather Service's, reach and the things that they're doing. If it crosses over the public-private line, you know, there's some people that want to do away with that, and I think that would be a big mistake. I think the more that we can, more value we get out of the National Weather Service, it's one of our most efficient, I think, for all the things that we've questioned here tonight, it's still one of our most efficient branches of the government, for sure.
James or Brian, you guys want to throw in anything about that before we close out this time?
I'd like to mention, follow up with what Bill said, and that is that the companies, the large companies that are in the weather business that want to see the National Weather Service shut down, don't want to see the National Weather Service stop collecting data, and those large companies don't want to pay for that data either. So it's
kind of a have your cake and eat it too?
Yeah, that's exactly where I was headed. It's one of these situations where they want the best of both worlds. They want to make a lot of money as a private company, and yet at the same time, they want to have all the resources, the computer models, the upper air data, and that upper air data. If the National Weather Service just for 24 hours missed two upper air runs, do you know what that would do to the computer models? No data in for 24 hours.
I tell you something that happened this year, I think, that is really going to be important, because if you watched any of the Senate subcommittee hearings on the hurricanes this year, one of the fellows from Florida, you know, alluded to that bill that's in the government or in Congress about, you know, limiting the National Weather Service. And he pointed out the fact that one of the private weather firms out there was so far off with Hurricane Dennis this year, had it had the prediction off by, you know, several hundred miles. I think that this senator from Florida said, look, you know, I'm not going to pay to get my weather forecast again. You know, the taxpayers have already paid for them. And you know, he said it would be over his dead body when Max Mayfield and the group at the National Hurricane Center was shut down. So I think a lot of people share that same opinion.
Okay. Let me say this real quickly, David. I am not anti-National Weather Service. I firmly agree with Brian and Bill. Yeah, I oftentimes I disagree with forecasts and, you know, would like to see the all these, you know, winter weather advisories streamlined a little bit. But I firmly believe that they need to be functioning. They need to do what they're doing. And I'm a big believer in their mission. I have many friends that work there, and I'll just say a big amen to what those guys are saying.
Real quickly, guys, this is Severe Weather Awareness Week in Alabama. Any comments on that right quick?
Brian Peters is Mr. Severe Weather Awareness.
You put in some time on that.
Learn your safety rules, because I just find it incredible to believe that Alabama can go through another spring severe weather season without one or two horrendous outbreaks of severe weather.
Maybe our time is running out again.
Well, we've gone for 5 years, right? Or six. Since April of 98 was our last big springtime severe weather event.
It was 8 years ago.
8 years ago. Time's running out. I mean, the law of averages. Despite, when you look at the number of tornadoes and you look at them by month, despite the fact that November jumped from being like about the fifth highest month to the third highest month, third or second highest month over the last 5 years, I just think that's an unusual anomaly, and the statistics say overwhelmingly that March, April, and May are our three biggest months, and our March and April are our two biggest months, and then May and November are kind of running neck and neck, although November shot ahead with the last 5 years or so. So this can't continue.
I guess our luck could be running out. I hope not. But, guys, it's been a great show. Very interesting. Thanks to everybody for participating. And we will – I hear umpteen subjects out of the show tonight that could all be standalone subjects for future podcasts, and maybe we can make that happen.
Plug one thing, David, real quick before we sign off here. I wanted to mention that the annual Southeast Severe Storm Symposium is coming up over at Mississippi State University. That is the first weekend in March, Friday, March the 3rd, and Saturday, March the 4th. And that's on campus, and that is just a great place to learn about weather. Some excellent speakers, excellent papers. Just go to do a search on Google or something for Southeast Severe Storm Symposium. I encourage anybody that's really interested to take it deeper to come on over to Starkville. It's only a couple hours west of Birmingham. We just have a great time over there. So it's the 3rd and the 4th of March.
We're going to expect a full report from you on a future Weather Brains podcast, okay?
We'll make it happen.
All right. Thanks, guys. If you'd like to contact us, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. We'd love to hear from you. For James Spann, Bill Murray, and Brian Peters, I'm David Black for The Weather Company from Birmingham, Alabama. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time for more Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved.